Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Did You Know? I'm your host, John C. Abercrombie. Today's program is very interesting because it features a all-black Army unit, the 25th Cavalry Bicycle Troops. And this was an experiment performed by the United States Army to put soldiers on bicycles. Yes, bicycles, those two-wheel contraptions that we are all familiar with. However, the bicycles that they used in those days, because we're speaking a long time ago, I believe this was during World War I, were very heavy. They had limited space or ability to carry provisions. The bicycles weighed down with the goods were in excess of 50 pounds. 50 pounds. And because of the difficult route that they had decided to take, this was a route from Missoula, Montana to St. Louis, Missouri, in excess of 1,900 miles. They picked bicycle riders, some of whom were experienced and some of whom were inexperienced. But it's more than just a trip about putting people on bicycles and having them traverse some of the most difficult terrain in the United States. As the trip was being planned, they looked at going through as much different landscape as possible. And this included going through mud, over hills, through rivers, and anything else that you can imagine. In those days, there were limited roads of which you could take, forcing them in many times to follow train tracks. And the train tracks in those days were not as we know now, because the ballast, that gravel that's between the ties there. Some of those gaps between ties were 24 inches and as much as 9 inches deep. And if you can imagine riding over them for extended periods of time, you see that this was not a comfortable trip. It was not an easy task. And when we talk about all black troops, that was something that America did, that other parts of the world did, which were not favorable to black troops. Because there were a lot of myths. There were a lot of common myths that denied them the opportunity to even lead their own people. They couldn't do that because people had these stupid ideas that black people were mentally inferior. And this came up along with slavery. Because remember, as we talk about slavery, we talk about people that supposedly could not determine what they wanted to do, that were not motivated, that could not self-determine what was best for them. And that justified holding people in slavery. This is why slave owners said this is the best thing that could happen to slaves, is that they be enslaved and make me rich, filthy rich. What we also don't focus on is the conditions under which these people were living. In most cases, when they were provided houses, they were very substandard housing. Many of them had no floors in them at all. And they were subject to catching fire because they had to have a fireplace in them. And many of these were just thrown together. So we don't see that. Can you imagine in the winter sleeping on the ground when it's cold, when it's wet, because somebody is claiming that you don't have enough intelligence to determine what you want to be? Now, that sounds plausible to many people because of the fact that they don't tell where we came from. They don't give us a complete history of who, what, and where we came from. In the early, early days, the best of the Greeks and the Romans went to Africa to be educated. Let me repeat that again. The early Greeks, the early Romans, sent their prized citizens to Africa to be educated. Now, does that sound like, and we come from there, does that sound like stock that's inferior to you? No, it's not. Not in the least. And so we have perpetuated a myth that has robbed an entire race, in many cases, of opportunities to have self-determination. And we did this for the single and sole purpose of enhancing the pockets of a few white people. When we look at the value of the slaves and the value that slavery produced, over half of the entire United States wealth was on the backs of slaves. On the backs of slaves. The value of these slaves was more than all the railroads and factories in the North. And yet many of those factories that were in the North were supporting slavery. What, you ask? Yes, they were supporting slavery. There were many shipbuilders in the Northeast, and they were building ships. What were they building these ships for? One of them was to go to Africa and displace people there and bring them to the Americas. All slaves didn't come to America. Many of them went into the southern regions, South America, Middle America, Mesoamerica. Columbus never set foot in North America, never set foot in North America. Yet we insist on praising him as the discoverer of America. He discovered the Americas because they were interconnected, so to speak, but he never set foot in North America. He never set foot in Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, any of those coastal states, Louisiana, Mississippi, any of those that bordered the Gulf of Mexico. He did not. But yet and still, we are eager to give him credit for that discovery. Yet and still, people that were educated, highly educated, that were here, were a benefit to the people here, don't receive credit. They do not receive credit. South Carolina, for example, had a healthy rice crop, made much money. But that rice isn't from the Orient. That rice that was grown was from Africa. There were people that were enslaved from Africa because they knew how to grow that rice. It was backbreaking work to make the fields where the rice was grown. These people knew it. We don't give them credit. We give them credit for picking cotton, but even among the skills that were here, many skilled people were brought here, and many of the crops were also brought here. And we have been able to produce lots of it because of what we were able to do. We're talking about the bicycle trip. So what has basically happened is we have dumbed down our knowledge of what black people did in America, dumbed it down, eliminated it in many cases, eliminated the contributions that we have made to this country. And when we talk about bicycle troops, it is not as far-fetched as you may think. Because in Europe, there were some that were put on bicycles, but they had roads over there. Our land was basically undeveloped. When we got here, the story of the pilgrims landing on Plymouth Rock is full of myth, full of holes. But we don't take the time and effort to look into it. We feel that controversy on any of these subjects is bad. We don't look at the good points that blacks have contributed to America. We don't look at the bad because they can be embarrassing, very embarrassing. And if we look at them, somebody may look for the good. And we don't want to do that because we don't want to bring anything to the light that embarrasses white kids. Now we have governments, state governments, that are wanting to ban what little bit of information we are passing on. Now, is this a program just for black people? No, absolutely not. Because we are a team. Blacks, whites, Asians, Native Americans, anybody that you can think of is a part of the American landscape. And they should be included in American history. But by and large, we don't. What we talk about is the fact, and I was so embarrassed, so hurt by this situation, that what they tell us, and the average history book is 888 pages, and yet in that, there's only a couple of pages devoted to black history, which says we're good in music and athletics. They don't talk about the brain power that we have here. They don't talk about those people that have succeeded here. And the 25th Cavalry Bicycle Troop is just one example. I want you to understand that what happened in this particular case is we had troops in Missoula, Montana, long ways towards the west, long ways towards the west. If you would go over the northern tier and take Interstate 90 or 94, because 90 splits into 90 and 94 and joins back together in Montana, that it's a long ways. And what they did was attempt to see how effective it would be to ride bicycles from there loaded with gear. Now, this only allowed for one blanket and half of a tent, so two people would bunk together. Now, we think, oh, okay, this nice weather, let's go for a bicycle ride. That isn't always what they ran into. They ran into heavy rain. They ran into snow. They ran into dense fog. They had to ford their bicycles, put them on their shoulders, and take them across rivers. And when the weather is cold, that's not the most comfortable mission you can take. And remember, these bicycles weighed in excess of 50 pounds. 50 pounds. When they looked at the criteria for those people riding the bicycles, there was a maximum height of 5'8", a maximum weight of 140 pounds. The trip was going to take, actually ended up taking 41 days. 41 days. Supplies were dropped off every 100 miles. Because the bicycles were so heavy, you couldn't take provisions with you. You couldn't take more than 2 days' provisions with you. And if you ran out of food, you're just out of food, folks. And this is not something that you look forward to. They had to ride in excess of 10 hours per day, and many cases much more than that. They had to sleep fast because they had to get up and move to the next spot. We find that how they were even perceived by the citizens of America differed the further east that they traveled. The further east that they traveled, the less respect that they got. In the West, people saw the uniform and respected the uniform of the U.S. Army, United States Army. And they were delighted. They would ask permission to camp on property that these people own. Sure, you can do that. They were right proud to be Americans, even though the soldiers that they saw were black. Even though the soldiers they saw were black. As they traveled east, they had to go across the Continental Divide. They had to move further and further east. And what did they face when they were getting towards the east? People that did not give a hoot about the uniform because the skin color of those people wearing that uniform was black. They may ask to camp on a, yeah, you can camp over there in the hog pen, which is not sanitary. These men left with one change of clothing. Let me remind you that in the 41 days, almost 6 weeks, they didn't have a chance to wash their clothing. All they had were one change of clothing. And yet and still, they kept their energy up. I want to tell you something else. When we look at history, history in many cases has bypassed common sense. It's bypassed common sense because we look as if these people of African descent, and that includes me, are among the least intelligent on the face of the earth, and that's not true. They are still trying to figure out how the pyramids were built, how other structures were built. Egypt is not in Asia. It's not in Europe. It's not in the Americas. It's on the continent of Africa. Africa as a continent could hold three United States in it, could hold three. So we're talking about a large country. When we talk about Africa, we are talking about over 50 different countries. My first trip to Africa went to South Africa, which is a country, not just a part of a continent. It's where Nelson Mandela spent time at Robben Island in a prison and later became the president of South Africa. This, ladies and gentlemen, shows what we are capable of doing. A minority of people controlled them. We had what is called apartheid, apartheid, if you will. And what it does is it separates the races. When I didn't realize this, but when a train would go by, there were cars for whites, there was a car for coloreds, there was a car for blacks, there was a car for Indians, people coming from the country of India. And they were kept separate. And that was what they had. Now, we had protests here over their apartheid ways, but we had the same or worse here. The same or worse here. And we still have vestiges of it here. It was called to attention because there were many countries moving into Africa, robbing it of its riches, because there was gold, there was diamonds, there were other precious metals, there was even rubber that caused people to descend on Africa, take advantage of the African peoples. And that's certainly what we did here in America. We brought shiploads and shiploads of people here. We sometimes don't think about it, but there are people in the Caribbean, in South America, that may be closer related to us than some of the people that we have here in America. Because when ships left The ship that you got on determined where you went. It was not based on where you came from. And so we have people here. Well, why did these people join the military? Why did they join the military? When we're talking about that, it comes after the Civil War. We often are calling the Civil War the war between the states. It was not a war between the states, folks. I don't care how you put it. When we separated from England, we had a constitution. We had a president. We had a vice president. We had an entire government set up. When William Henry Gist of South Carolina, who used to own my mother's ancestors, used to own them, signed the secession order and was joined by 10 other states to form a separate country. That is what fought. They took up arms against America. Many of these people were people that had pledged their allegiance to America. They had to disavow that allegiance. They had to take off their uniforms. They had to lay down their American weapons. They had to vow allegiance to this new country and pick up another uniform, other weapons at which to fight against America. That's not a war between states. That's a war between two countries. A lot of this was based on a bunch of mythology and lies and just outright falsehoods. That's what we had. And so as a result of that, many people, some of them knowing better, some of them not knowing better, most of them not being taught that we were anything above able to pick cotton. But we had skilled crafts. When you look up people like Horace King, Horace King escaped many of the ravages of slavery because he was the only one that could build bridges across the Chattahoochee Valley in Southeast America. He was black. What most people don't realize is that blacks, when they were given their freedom, were given 1 year to get out of the state. 1 year to get out of the state, or they faced being re-enslaved again. So you have your family, you have your wife, you have your children here. You're free. The choice then is, do I leave my wife, my children, my family, everybody that I know, and go somewhere else? That's a tough choice, folks. Very, very tough and difficult choice to make. But that's what they were faced with. And they wanted to fight. They wanted to fight for America because this was their country. This is where they were born. They fought for the country, but as equally important, they fought for their rights of free citizenship, their rights of free citizenship to be considered American citizens. We get now to a point where we say that the Constitution says, no, you cannot consider race in anything. That is absolutely not true. Because the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments were put there to guarantee these people rights that they had not had for centuries. They did not have many of the rights of freedom and citizenship. And we now get to the point where we say you cannot consider those on that basis. The founding fathers, those people that passed those amendments, knew exactly what they were doing, and they did it for a purpose. It's some form of repatriation of what we should have had all along. We hear about 40 acres and a mule. What they did is they took land that had been stolen from Native Americans. that had been stolen from Native Americans. Initially, when America was founded, they had indentured servants. They would come over and serve a period of time in exchange for their passage here, again, making America rich by providing the labor necessary. And at that point in time, they would be given 50 acres of land. We see Anthony Johnson, a black man, that came over as an indentured servant. He eventually owned 250 acres of land because he came over as an indentured servant. And I won't go spend a lot of time talking about him at this time, but there was a gentleman by the name of John Punch who came over as an indentured servant who ran away along with two white people because they did not like the conditions under which they are working. Separate story, separate time. But the ending of it is a surprise that you will not believe, because we have not been given our history. We have not been told who we are and what we are. When we look at civilizations in Africa, such as Timbuktu, Timbuktu was a center of knowledge. This is one of the places the Greeks and Romans sent their children to study. A town of over 10,000 people. And believe me, you don't have a town of 10,000 people without civilization. You do not have it. You have to have some form of government. You have to have some form of laws in order to maintain some semblance of anything. And this is what we see. They operated. There are thousands upon thousands of books now still there that have never been translated. Many of them scientific, many of them of significant cultural history. And that started there. And yet and still we don't. We made it illegal to study or to teach black people to read, write numbers. And part of this has resulted in the fact that then we can take advantage of these people. We don't teach them the language, and so they cannot articulate what it's like being a slave. There have been some people that escaped that particular nightmare. When we look at, I can't remember her name right now, but she is from Eatington, North Carolina. And she wrote a book, Incidents in the Life of a Slave Girl. North Carolina has authenticated that she wrote the book, not a ghostwriter. And she spent 7 years in the attic of a house in Eatington, North Carolina, to avoid being raped by her owner. We had the ability to determine what we wanted out of life, and what we were getting is not it. When we look at the intercoastal waterways, it was dug by black slaves. Very difficult work. But we go back to these slaves or the people that actually built this canal. And when we look at the people that were placed on this bicycle ride coming from Missoula, Montana, which for most of us on the East Coast is more than 1,900 miles away. And we find that there is one gentleman in the ride from Charlotte, North Carolina. I want you to read this post, and I want you to read it carefully, because I have put as much information as I can about the people that were participants in the ride. And we find that they come from many different places, many different surnames, many of which would absolutely surprise us. We sometimes think that history has excluded us because we haven't done anything. But we find that is not the truth. We have been purposefully excluded from history. When these people left Missoula, Montana, and I have been through Missoula many times because I lived in Washington State, And I have driven back and forth. I've flown back and forth. I've taken my motorhome back and forth through this area. But I knew absolutely nothing that 25th Cavalry are troops in Missoula at all. Didn't dawn on me because of what history had told me. Basically, everybody was in the South picking cotton. I knew that there were Buffalo soldiers. I didn't know the 9th and 10th Cavalry and the 24th and 25th Infantry were Buffalo soldiers. Now, these people set out on a trip. They went through mud so deep that you could hardly ride your bicycle through it because the tires would become caked with mud, and you had to stop and scrape the tires in order to ride them at all. But they did it. They persisted. And I'm not sure if white troops could have done that. I may be completely wrong. But these people were mentally prepared for the difficulties that they would encounter along the way. Many times, all they had to eat was hardtack, which was a brick-hard or rock-hard piece of bread, basically flavorless. Just something to eat is all that it was. But it would not rot, would not spoil. I mean, that's something to recommend. And yet and still, they persisted. They persisted over the mountains. They sometimes had to ride on these railroad tracks. The bicycles were heavy. The wheels were wooden. They were not the steel wheels that we have today that are lighter and stronger. And sometimes they had wheels break. They had a mechanic. And what would happen when a bicycle would break down? He would fix it on the spot. He would exchange his bicycle for the broken one. They would go on, and he would have to catch them in order to join up with them. Now, out in the wilderness of the Americas, there are many things that you don't want to encounter alone. Bears, cougars, other animals, and in addition to getting lost and nobody there to search for you. These people maintained their composure during this entire time. They went through sandy areas. And again, sometimes it is difficult to ride through sandy areas. Your wheels bog down into the sand. These were not bicycles with 10 speeds or 5 speeds or 15 speeds. They were single speed bicycles, heavily laden. And yet and still, these people were able to persist. Now, we don't hear much about them. But once they completed their journey, I think everybody completed that started except one individual who became sick. And someone decided that rather than going on to St. Louis on the train, that he'd be sent back to Missoula. Somebody's choice. But I believe there were 21 that started, 20 finished. And we see this. We see that determination. What was the secondary reason that they proceeded on this trip? To try to earn the rights that belong to American citizens. They had pledged their life to battle on what America believed was right. They wanted to earn full citizenship for themselves, their family, and their community. What could be more patriotic than that? What? Now, as we go through this program, I find that I get so excited about the program that sometimes I fail to do this. I talked about the ability to call in, ask questions about this segment or others, because we want to be an interactive program. We want to be one that answers your questions. I had no idea about this subject and had been through Missoula many times. I would have stopped. I would have inquired. I would have looked at museums. I would have inquired into their history, because there are many ways to do it, and one of them is go to the library. We had on Friday a program at the Spartanburg Public Library. I got the word out to as many people as I could. But after the American Civil War, there is a hand-sewn flag that was used by the people of Spartanburg, South Carolina, in a parade celebrating the end of the war, the acceptance of America. That flag is over 150 years old. We lost track of it. And due to some very difficult research, we found it. It was at a museum in California. We negotiated its return to Spartanburg. That flag, ladies and gentlemen, is permanently housed in the Spartanburg Public Library at 151 Church Street. I want you to realize and recognize that there is a lot of history that we have never been exposed to, because much of it would be embarrassing white people. Not that it would glorify black people, but that it might be embarrassing to white people. We're going to live with this problem until we finally break open the fact that we have a rich culture, a very rich culture. That flag is now back. It is a part of American history. And while black history is a part of American history, it should be a part of everybody's knowledge. But we eliminate things that we sometimes think may be embarrassing. Don't teach my child the truth, is what we are saying. Teach them a lie if they might be uncomfortable with it. But you know what it takes in order to get past that point, acknowledging what's happened? I don't hold you responsible for what happened before you were born. But I do hold you responsible, as I hold myself responsible, for what happens after you have been born. Why can't we tell the truth about everyone? This is Hispanic Heritage Month, and I think it deserves as much credit as does black history or any other history that we have. We have brought people here to these shores, and we have not been responsible in the way that we have treated their history. When we look at the Golden Spike driven into Promontory Point, Utah, joining the railroads of the East and the West, always see a white man. Who laid those tracks? Asian men, many of whom lost their life. Where did the land come from to start with? It belonged to the Native Americans. We have now squozen them down to less than 1% of the land they originally owned. Basically nothing. There are some Native American people that do not like the $20 bill. They do not like the $20 bill and the memories that it has. Because the gentleman on there put them on the trail of tears. Put them on the trail of tears. Let me show you another way in which history has been shrunk down because of what may be embarrassing. York, there's a navigator that came with Lewis and Clark to the West Coast. We hear very little about York. We hear a lot about Sacagawea, and Sacagawea was a great person. But we don't hear anything about the black man. Why? We don't want to bring up the subject of slavery, because they lied to York. They told York if he would go along with them, and he did much of the activity with the Native Americans, that he would be freed. They lied to York. And this is what happens many times. We make treaties. We break them. The Black Hills of South Dakota, we made a treaty with the Native Americans that we would take part of it and give them part. The part that we gave to them had gold on it. Gold! Things that we ain't going to do that. We ain't going to do that. We ain't going to give you anything that you already had, that we made a promise to you, a treaty with you that you could keep. We're going to take that now. And this happened time and time and time again. We sometimes don't realize that all Native Americans do not have tribal rights. All Native Americans do not have tribal rights. We disrespect them further because in many places, in many situations, we call them the name that other tribes call them, not what they wish to be called themselves. Look it up. We have access to tons and tons of information now that we did not have before. Before I forget it, the number to call in, and the reason to call in is because I can see you on my dashboard, is 646-668-8217. 646-668-17 is the name to call in. Now, what can you do once you do that? I see you on my dashboard. There will be times when I will open the microphone, and you can have the opportunity to ask me questions about this topic or any topic in the area of Black history, Black life. I started off doing amazing things that I found. But we cannot fully understand what the life of Black people was like in this country without seeing the good, the bad, and yes, the ugly. And there is plenty of that to go around, plenty of that that goes around. But we have men here that accomplished a task that almost beats human endurance. We pass around the myth that Black people were lazy. We find a cemetery in Wall Street. Wall Street, yeah, that Wall Street. And as we examine the bodies, forensic science tells us a lot. As we find these places, we're embarrassed to find them. But what we find out is it showed that in many places, people will work so hard that ligaments pulled away from bone. This doesn't come around from sitting around watching TV. It doesn't come from sitting around playing dominoes or checkers or any other game. It comes from hard, forced work. Hard, forced work. When we cleared the land in South Carolina to plant rice on, to plant other crops on, it wasn't the white people that did it. It was Black people. We had skilled craftsmen. They built the White House, White House. We found the quarry where the stone comes from. We know much about what's happened, but we don't want to talk about that because it could be embarrassing to little Johnny or little Susie that this is what happened, and we disrespect these people who gave their life, who gave their all to this country, hoping to belong, hoping to be shown some love, hope to be shown some respect. Let me tell you how bad it was. If a man and a woman had a child and the female was enslaved, of which most of them were, and I'm talking about in this case of two Black people having a child. You did not own that child. That child was not yours. It belonged to her owner, who could decide in a moment's notice, oh, man, I got a debt from playing cards. Let's ship him down the river. Is that what you want your legacy to be? Is that what you want your children to find out? I don't care if your ancestors owned 1,000 slaves. That's not the important issue. It happened. In my mind, it's shameful. In my mind, it could be embarrassing. The thing to do is to step up now. We think that everybody in the Old South was pro-slavery, and that's not true. There were entire communities that were anti-slave. There were people that were anti-slave. There were white people that participated in the Underground Railroad. There were white people that denied the fugitive slave law. And fugitive slave law, like in 1850, said that all I had to do was to say, you were my slave. And you, Mr. White Man, better help me catch it, even if you don't believe in slavery, or you are violating the law. This is how we had Solomon Northup in 12 years a slave, a free man, taken captive, sold into the South. We had a system that we say is liberty and justice for all, and it was not liberty and justice for all. What it said is that courts, black people could not testify in court against a white person, no matter how right they were. So he couldn't testify in his own behalf. He finally got word to someone who was able to come south and defend him. But imagine you're a free person, never been one day in slavery. And all of a sudden, you're now enslaved and there's no way out. Is that the America that you want to be known as? Is it? I'm sure that there are some people that are. This goes back to a racial superiority. America is not the only country that did that. I'm going to give you an extreme example. This example happened in Canada, but I'm sure that it happened here in America as well. There is a lady by the name of Viola Desmond who was essentially the Madam C.J. Walker of Canada. She had a cosmetic company, and she also, now what we sometimes don't think about is Madam C.J. Walker made many black women rich, because they were able to run their own business. They were able to sell products. They were able to earn money. Same thing was happening in Canada. But they didn't have de jure segregation as we have it here. De jure means that it was backed up by law. No matter how wrong it was, there were laws that took care of it. And what happened is she was delivering products. They didn't have UPS, FedEx back in those days. She's delivering products. Her car has a malfunction. It's going to be the next day before the parts can get to the city where she's in. She goes to a movie. She wants a seat downstairs because she's having problems with her eyesight. Says, I want one seat downstairs. They sell her a ticket for upstairs. And you would think, what's the big deal? She was arrested, roughed up by the police, jailed overnight, required hospitalization. Why? What were the charges against her? There was no law against her sitting on the first row. Income tax evasion. Income tax. How did we get from to there? Income tax evasion. The difference in the cost of a seat downstairs and upstairs included 1 cent tax, one penny of tax. So they charged her with income tax evasion. Sentenced her, I believe, to 6 months in jail and a $26 fine. Of that $26, $6 went to the owner of the movie establishment for turning her in. Canada looked at the case. They overturned the conviction. They didn't give her a pardon. They gave her a free pardon. A pardon says you committed the crime, but we're going to forgive you for it. A free pardon says you never should have been charged in the first place. Now let's get back to our troops on the bicycles. They handled themselves remarkably well, remarkably well. And we should honor that. But yet and still, we don't even know about it. What did they get as a reward for their demonstration of their tenacity, their ability to survive? It's not necessarily a bad thing, but they were sent into the Spanish-American War, which gave them yet another time to prove that they were great. Read the roughest riders and see what black people did during that war. When you look at Patton's Black Panthers, the 761st, and we did a post on this just a few weeks ago, they won the Battle of the Bulge. They won the Battle of the Bulge. They were all black troops. When they went into war, the Germans were there. And we had one of the sergeants get out of his troop under heavy fire and take this tree, put a chain around it, pulled it back with the tank, and entered that war. We would not take no for an answer. Another one is in war. And what we did, we fought, and he got out at great risk to his own life and struggled, captured a machine gun nest, and in doing so, allowed America to get into and win the Battle of the Bulge. And we don't hear about that. That is something that we should be able to hear about. I don't care who was involved. They had the uniform on of our country. Many of them never made it back. And what we were trying to do is to make sure that our wives, our children, our neighborhood, people that look like us had access to full freedom, full citizenship. And yet and still, we get back over here and you can't even talk about it. Shame on you. Shame on you. I'm going to give you that number again. We have one person that has called in. I know that there are others listening because we see the stats that come in about the program. And that's 646-668-8217. Don't be embarrassed because you don't know something. We go to school to learn, but now people want to make it illegal to learn. That's as bad as when we had bucket schools. Bucket schools. Why bucket schools? Because white people didn't want to see you with a book. So we had to put the books in a bucket, as if we were delivering something to the white folks. And we couldn't go at the same time because it would draw too much attention. So we had to go one by one in there. We put our school, our books in buckets so that they wouldn't know we were learning. That's how difficult it was to learn. But we have people like Frederick Douglass, a great orator, who learned to write by trading his lunch for lessons, trading his lunch, trading his food for the ability to learn to read and write. This is how hungry we were for education. This is how hungry we still should be for education, because we have shown the ability to succeed in education. A couple of weeks ago, I want you to go to AmazingBlackHistory.com sometimes at your leisure and click on blog list, because you'll find well over 300 posts, and we post every Thursday. And when you find out about Solomon Carter Burke, Solomon Carter who? Solomon Carter Burke. I didn't know about him, and he graduated from the same college that I did. I think he passed in 1914, over 100 years ago. But he became a medical doctor in America. He became the first black psychiatrist in America. He, as a medical doctor, was able to perform autopsies and pursued a condition that we are faced with today that is an absolute nightmare, and that's Alzheimer's disease. He knew much of the information that we know today, but they would not fund his work. Why? Because it was off target? No, not because it was off target, but because of the color of his skin. America has shown itself that it would rather hurt them itself than to give credit to someone else, than to give credit to anyone else. And this is hurtful. As hurtful as hurtful can, we would rather suffer than give credit to someone else. We look at the blood bank, and most of us don't realize that it was created by Dr. Charles Drew. And what we were doing is losing soldiers needlessly on the battlefield because of a drop in blood pressure. They were going into shock. They were dying. Drew created the blood bank that we use today, and he was working with the American Red Cross, but he left the American Red Cross. Why did he leave the American Red Cross? Because they insisted that there be two blood banks, a needless waste of money, of effort, of time, a needless waste, and so he left. We sometimes hear the story that he bled to death outside of an Atlanta hospital because they didn't accept black people. That is not a true story, but it has the ring of truth to it. And let me tell you why. Because many black people have died because they have been taken to a white hospital that refused admittance to them. It did not happen outside of an Atlanta hospital. It happened outside of Alamance County, North Carolina. But what we don't know about that story, or what does not travel with that story, is that he was treated. His family sent a letter to the hospital thanking them for their action. But something else may have contributed to that accident. He and three other doctors were in a car going back. Now, understand that you could not stay in a white hotel, a motel, in those days. So he's tired. He falls asleep. His foot gets entangled in the gears, and they have difficult time getting him out. He basically did bleed to death, but he was treated at that hospital. And the family gave credit to those people that did. But when we look at America, is that something that we want to hold up and say, hey, look what we did? No, it's embarrassing. The way that we change that is we do something about it. And where does that start? Where does it start? It starts right now, right here, by discussing the problem. No matter how good or bad. I'm not saying that black people are saints. I'm not saying that white people are saints. All of us can do something, but it starts now, and it starts with a discussion. What in the world is wrong with talking about black troops who succeeded? What about Waverly Woodson? Waverly Woodson landed on D-Day and was a medic, and was wounded severely by bomb fragments as he was landing on the beach. And yet and still, he worked for 36 straight hours until he just fell over from exhaustion. During this time, He amputated one person's foot. He worked on any and everybody that came forth. We don't talk about the black people that were there and leaving us with the idea that only the white people fought. But when we look at the 320th Balloon Battalion, Balloon Battalion? Yeah, what was happening is enemy planes were coming in, opening fire on troops on the beach and just slaughtering them. But the 320th Balloon Battalion would set aloft balloons which had guy wires to them that would basically cripple the enemy planes and bring them down. We don't talk about them. Now, Waverly Woodson should have received the Medal of Honor. Well, why didn't he? The reason he didn't is because his record while in care of the United States Army supposedly burned, although there were stories here in America printed primarily by the black press and others that they could have used. We don't want to glorify anything that black people have done. That's why I am so proud of people like Corporal Freddie Stowers from Sandy Springs, South Carolina, who was the first black to win the Medal of Honor in World War I. There is a statue to him located in Anderson County, and we need to pay tribute to that. I contact his family, and I just got a text. We just changed text messages a day or so ago. And we see the struggle that they had to go to get a statue to him. He finally got the Medal of Honor, and it was awarded by George H.W. Bush years after he was killed. I am looking at doing a post on Henry Johnson. Who is Henry Johnson? Henry Johnson received the Medal of Honor because he and Needham Roberts fought off German soldiers trying to enter their camp. They fought off at least 20 and possibly as many as 30 German soldiers in hand-to-hand combat, 2 against 20, 2 against 30, whatever the figures may be. It is an amazing accomplishment, amazing accomplishment. Spartanburg has a memorial to him, and I bet most of you have driven past it hundreds of times and never seen it. I went out. I know where it is, and getting to it or seeing it is very, very difficult. Yet the United States has renamed Fort Polk in honor of Henry Johnson. We don't want to give praise to anybody that we have held down. And rather than making progress, we want to hold it down. We are willing to spend every effort that we can to make sure that we don't give credit where credit is due. Is that the America you want to be associated with? It's not the one that I want to be associated with. Because I want my children, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren to have opportunities to contribute to this country as they should be able to, as anybody should be able to in this country. When we look at the tenacity that it took, you have one blanket. Your bicycle has to cross that river, and you have to put it on your shoulders. You have to get wet. You've only got one blanket, one tent, and it's snowing outside. But you endure. This is something that you should be proud of, no matter your race, your ethnicity. There are people today, and it's almost embarrassing to think about it, but there are white people today that technically are black because of the laws that were written, that if you have one drop of blood in some places and the average body has 90,000 drops of blood. In some places, if you are 1/8 black, which meant that your great-great-grandparents, and there are some people here that don't know who they are, that out of those, if one is black, and this is what happened to Homer Plessy. Homer Plessy had 1 out of 8 of his great-great-grandparents that was black. Therefore, he was defined as being black. But Homer Plessy did not look black at all. In fact, the case was a setup. And Frederick Douglass said, do not take it to the Supreme Court, because it could blow up in your face. And it did that. They came up with this separate but equal. Always it was separate, never equal. I'm going to give that number again because I'm going to open the mics in just a few minutes. 646-668-8217. If you have a question about something else dealing with Black history, bring it up, because sometimes it's those suggestions that end up in posts like this. Sometimes it's an opportunity to answer a question. Sometimes it's an opportunity to encourage others to bring up questions that don't come up. When you read books like Lies My Teacher Told Me, we find embarrassing truths that are there, not only with this, but with other things as well. We cannot build on history if that history is not built on truth. We cannot. The Bible tells us to build your church, build your home on a solid foundation. What we're doing is we're taking a bunch of by G's and by gollies and I think and it could have been, and using that as our foundation. Not good. That means that we are defined to do this again. And we're not basing it on the truth. We're basing it on what we wish could have happened. In many cases, we're basing it on what people thought, that were unwilling to take a controversial position because it was right. When we look at the books that our children are given, they are selected by groups out of the school, parent-teacher associations, that do not. They are afraid of the truth. This is why we have states saying, no, can't study Black history here. Why? Because you might find out that Black people are capable, as capable as you are. That's what we need to find out and make sure that the most capable get opportunities. But don't pass other people by. Sometimes it is a matter of age. Sometimes it's a matter of reinforcement. When we come to the table, when we set up, we need to know how to teach our children. Music is one of the greatest teachers that we have ever come across. Because I bet, I don't care how old you are, you probably remember some of the songs that you learned in kindergarten. Kindergarten! That is a great source of information, but yet and still, we don't want to use it today. We don't want to talk about those things that are of interest to the kids and the students. We want to do it the classical way. Let's do it the effective way. The effective way. That number that I gave you can be used to join this program anytime. Put it in your phone. Put it in bookmark it. Do whatever you need to do so that you can get here. And when you get here, don't be afraid to join in the conversation. I encourage you to have our youth listen, because they are effective. They are affected what we teach them. When we see people that give up hope because they don't see themselves in history, And I was there. I know exactly what it's like. I didn't develop an interest until I was in my 50s because I didn't know that we had done anything other than pick cotton. I didn't realize how effective history was in allowing us to understand that we were created by God, not as a second team, but as a first team player. What has happened is the devil has come in and said, let's not give them a chance because they might do real good, real good. Are you afraid of your ability to stay on top of the pile? That's can be a good thing. But let's have the competition. Let us have the competition. When we learn what we have done, Leonidas Berry formed the first successful kidney transplant between two people who were not identical twins. He didn't perform the first kidney transplant, but the first successful kidney transplant between two people who were not identical twins. We have Dr. Daniel Hale Williams, who performed the first successful surgery on a human heart that was beating. Man lived for decades afterwards, who was black. Both of them were black. He started Provident Hospital in Chicago, and it became a nursing hospital, teaching nursing, because in days gone by, we couldn't even find anybody that would teach us to be nurses. And this is shameful. It's shameful. We have now great, great teachers and great, great nurses who were given an opportunity. That's what we want to do. I am opening the microphones now. There's still time to bring in your question, to bring in your suggestion. Encourage your children to listen. We're here every Sunday at 4 p.m. The person that we're bringing on now was at the Spartanburg Library on Friday when we talked about the Freedom Flag, a flag that goes back over 150 years. And was originated in Spartanburg, South Carolina, but lost to history. What from your town, what from your family, what from your knowledge has been hidden because nobody wanted to bring it up? We have people that have told us about things that they have done, but we didn't want to believe them because we didn't read it in that book when we came along. But it's there. It's real. And there's more out there. Marshall, how you doing today?
Yes, sir, Mr. Abercrombie. How are we doing today?
Oh, man, we're full of muscadines, but we're doing good.
I hear that. I tell you, I say this every week, that you all are certainly a blessing to the black community and to the whole world for giving out this type of information that you've given out. And I know that you have done research and all, and pretty much what you're telling us. And I told one friend, and he said, well, you can't call him. I said, well, you just have to listen. There is a time, you know, that you can call back and ask your questions and all. And he was somewhat offended. I said, well, you know what, that's the way we are. If we can't have it our way, we'd just rather not to be involved. And that's wrong. We have to get involved. We have to be involved to find out our rich culture and all of the things that our race has done in this America that we live. How you cannot be feel important, and how you cannot feel that if you have something to say, say it. If it's something you want to do, do it, and challenge them. Challenge, make a challenge out of it, because we don't know what the Lord has for us to do unless we really get down and ask him, and he will tell us. And so that's what I'm doing. The Lord done told me, and I've experienced this practically all my life, been in civil rights practically all of my life, ever since I was in the 11th grade. And that's what I enjoy. I enjoy learning and knowing about myself. That's what we need to do, find out about yourself. Thank you.
Yeah, when we were talking at your house, was that last week? Anyway, we were talking about it. And one of your relatives asked, what did I see and like about Marshall? I said, because he does. He ain't just a talker. He ain't going to sit back in the shadows and just talk. He's going to do. And this guy that doesn't want to call in, tell him that we can get together wherever he wants. I'll talk to him and see what he has to say about that. Sometimes we are afraid to talk about what we know about because we haven't heard anybody talk about it. I'll talk to him. If you've got a church or other group that needs someone that they can talk to, ask questions to, call me. We can set that up. That's what we're all about, and that's why we do the program. And I thought I took you some cards out. If you need some more, let me know.
All right. Appreciate that. Well, we still have a few, and I was talking to the young man that we're working on this, getting together one morning for breakfast where we can talk up some of this stuff. And he called me this week and said, Marshall said, this man has a lady that he would like to bring aboard. Is it okay he can bring? I said, sure. She can probably tell us some things that we're not familiar with, because that would be from a woman's perspective, not from a man. So sure, we anybody that want to come and talk with us and meet with us for breakfast, and we can talk this Black history up, that what you are doing and what you are telling us, this is what we want to do. This is how we can get it started.
And if they got a busload, we'll find a place that'll fit that bus.
Yes, and please bring your pastor along with you, because we find out, and I was so surprised the other night, Friday night, that there were not any ministers there from the Black community there to hear about the Freedom Flag. That was quite interesting to know how this lady taken her petticoat and printed the Freedom Flag on her petticoat. That's something else. I tell you, I certainly enjoyed it. I enjoyed the entire session, and a lot of us should have been there, but it is what it is, and I'm glad that we were there.
Okay, now let me make an announcement at this point, because on November 7th, at 7 o'clock at the Spartanburg Library, I'll be speaking on Blacks in the Military.
Blacks
in the Military.
And
it's going to be on November 7th at 7 o'clock at the Spartanburg Library. We're going to go all the way back to the American Revolutionary War, and we're going to work forward. Now, the last one that I did was on women in the military, and there are some dynamite women that we don't know about, that all of us should know about, men, women, Black, white, Asian, everybody should know about. Spartanburg Library, as other libraries, have done tremendous work. Now, I want to make mention of this. That flag is over 150 years old and somehow had been lost. And due to the research that the Spartanburg Library has done, they traced that flag down in Whittier, California, which is where Richard Nixon was born, and were able to negotiate its return to Spartanburg. We often think that nothing happens near us or to people that we may know, because when Brad Steinecke did his research, he talked about the Fosters here in Spartanburg, South Carolina, and the role that they played. And I know that Jimmy Schwartz doing some information on Walnut Grove Plantation. I put him in touch with Larry Miller and Faith and Barbara Jackson, and other people, because it has happened here. We just don't know about it. And there's more that's happened here that we don't know about. When you look at Cedar Springs, for example, who would think that history included Cedar Springs or many of the other areas that we have around here? Did. But we need to throw off this cloak of fear of talking about it and bring it out. I did not know anything about Black history until I was in my 50s. And you talk about embarrassing. It is embarrassing not to know your history. And when I talk about that monument to Henry Johnson, we've got an entire military base named after him. Fort Polk is now Fort Henry Johnson. That man is here. And we have a memorial to him, and it acts like we're afraid people to know that it even exists. Because I could take you out there and have you within 20 feet of it, and you couldn't find it. 20 feet, and you couldn't find it. And that's not who America is. We accept what we have done. We congratulate people. We pat them on the back, regardless of race, color, creed. And now that we're in Hispanic Heritage Month, I think that we need to be aware that the same thing that's happened to us is happening to them. And all of us have played a part in making this a great country. And we need to make it even greater. So, yeah, that was a fantastic presentation. And Brad did a fantastic job there. I wish we could have packed that room full.
Can you give us the date again on October? You will be back at the library?
It'll be November 7th.
November
7th, 11-7. At 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock.
November 7th, okay.
And I hope that we can fill up that room, just pack it full.
Yeah.
Because what
happens
when
that's what we're
going to
do. We're going to get the word out here in this wealth of Lyman Duncan area, get the word out and get it out to the churches. I spent most of my day yesterday getting out information about voting and our the Florence Chapel alumni having our yard sale out at Florence Chapel on the 7th of next month. And I was out getting all of that out much of yesterday and today, this morning, going to church, stopping at different churches, giving out this information, and got to my own church, and they didn't even announce it at my own church. So, you know, it is what it is, but I do what I have to do, you know, and then let somebody, and they say, let the Lord handle it. Well, that's what I guess I have to do, let him handle it.
Yeah, well, we can solicit people that might have a list of the churches and organizations in and around Spartanburg County. So that we can get that information out. It's very, very important.
Very important. We will
appreciate anybody. If you have part of a list or anything else, contact us. We will appreciate it.
I have a list, and I'm definitely going to get that list to you.
Okay, I appreciate it, and we'll work on that and try to get word out for October 7th on Florence Chapel. So that's important. Even if we don't buy anything, we meet people.
And that's
good. And it's not just a Black-only event. We've had
anybody. Yes.
So unless we have some other callers, we have less than 5 minutes left. We'll go ahead and close the program. So if you got something, call in real quick, or else save it for next week. And we look forward to it.
If there is someone, if there, if there is someone that's listening that have the mobile unit where they sell food at, they are more than welcome to come to Welford to the yard sale, because I understand that they do not want the grills with the charcoals, called the charcoal burns the grass, and it has to be a mobile unit. So anybody that have the mobile unit, you may know someone have the mobile unit, they can sell out of the mobile unit. That is good. They can come to Front Chapel on the 7th on that Saturday, and it'll be from 7 until 2 o'clock. And the spaces is $10 per space. Thank you.
Excellent. All right. I don't see anyone else calling in. I appreciate it, Marshall. And I appreciate
you,
all of our listeners. We'll be back next week at 4 p.m. Invite somebody to join us. Invite a young person to join us as well. And with that, my friends, I hope that you all have a blessed week. And thanks for listening.
Bless you.
The program you're
Bless
listening
you.
To is Did You Know? And I am your host, John C. Abercrombie. Be blessed, my friends. Be blessed.